Hello and welcome to this webinar from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. My name is Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the Business Marketing Club. The BMC is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers. And we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, podcasts, training, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. And today we have over 1,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very, very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. And this is a seminal webinar. This is the final of these webinars on how business marketers are responding to the COVID-19 crisis. We'll hear shortly how today's speakers are seeing the impact of the crisis on them, their organizations, their projects, their working practices, jobs, marketing messages, marketing channels, and their profession. As you listen, type a question or comment into the questions box and start your question with the name of the speaker that you'd like to be able to address it. And I'll put your questions and comments to the speaker after we've heard from all of the speakers today. If you represent a business that has a B2B marketing project or role that you'd like to ask for help in filling from the community on this call, drop some details in the questions box as well. And I'll mention it at the end of this webinar. We've already had one person from the community come to us with a potential job opening, and we'll talk more about that at the end. So stay with us. Please also flag in the questions box if you'd like to be a speaker at a future BMC webinar right about this one, or find out more about the BMC, and I'll be in touch. You can tweet along to today's webinar using the hashtag B2B Lockdown. That's B2B Lockdown. Okay, let's get started. Our first speaker today is Adelshaw Goddard's Brian McCready. Brian is a senior B2B marketer with a track record in telecoms, media and sport, professional services and defense technology industries. His team won the Grand Prix at the 2018 B2B Marketing Awards, and Brian was named Most Creative Individual in B2B in 2017 by B2B Marketing Magazine. Brian, it's brilliant to have you on the webinar. Over to you.
Thanks, Dave. Hi, everyone. So over this recent series of webinars, for those that have joined them, we've heard lots of great marketers talk about how they've pivoted and changed and adapted over the recent months. There's probably not a lot that I've been doing that's much different from them. So I'm going to take a slightly different track today, given this is the end of this series and we're reflecting back on what we learned. And I'm just going to give a pretty honest perspective, one marketer to others, about just how bloody tough it's been to win in this environment. But then I'll move on and just share some positive thoughts on stuff, if anything, we can probably take away from the last few months and apply to the future. So just reflect on a moment on stuff we already know, but it's worth pausing for thought. You know, that there's events beyond marketers' control that we can't do anything about, that forecasting is incredibly tough. Anyone that's making strong predictions about the future probably needs to rethink. We're all fighting for absolutely every single penny of income that we can, because client spending, it's been so tightly controlled and discretionary items apart. So forecasting's tough. We know we've got lesser channels, and those channels now become really congested as every single one of us is putting more and more and more content onto those channels. So clients have become inundated, and let's face it, a lot of it is quite undifferentiated. A lot of us have got similar responses. Not all of it's cutting through. We've seen clients recently tell us that they're getting something like 180 marketing emails from different vendors in an hour. We've seen in our space about a 400% increase in outbound volume from our rivals of mails and stuff. And, we learned recently that at least one of our rivals has been doing something like 350 plus ad campaigns a month for quite some time on various different channels. And they're not the only ones. So, it's pretty congested out there. I think we all know that. And of course, when we review it, it's been the ultimate stress test for all of us, for our technology, our processes, our strategies, our people, our personal skills, our culture, how well hedged our businesses are, our brand strength, you name it. It's been a real stress test. And I'm sure for you, it has for me, it's highlighted a lot of positives about where I am, but probably also revealed some stress fractures. And that might sound like quite a negative place to start a webinar, you know, but the reality is winning is always tough in competitive markets. We all know this, but this is about as tough as I hope it's ever going to get for us. And despite what other people say and how positive people are on these things, you know, there is no silver bullet or there's no miracle cure. And we have to face up to that. It's been a really shitty, tough time for a lot of people, and we've all had to work really hard. But of course, it's not all doom and gloom, and looking maybe for the positives we can take away and apply each of us for the future. It's, you know, we'll have all learned some pretty vital lessons about ourselves and our brands and our services during this. And you know, lessons learned are always vital for the future. They'll stand us in good stead, no doubt. And of course, once we've revealed stress fractures, we can fix them. But I think where this is probably really useful, and I'm building up to hopefully quite a positive message, is the pandemic has reminded us actually what really, really matters in marketing. And it's not all about content marketing, and it's not all about ABM, and it's not all about data. Really, hopefully we've all reconnected, but what we're here to do is keep current clients really, really happy and protect our core, about reveal as many new insights and find many new innovations and new ideas as possible to meet the new demands of clients and develop new products. And ultimately, you know, we are relied upon to help build differentiation and distinctiveness into what we do, not just in our communications, but also our wider value propositions. And I think what the crisis has done for me, and I hope it's done for you, is that it's reminded us that actually it's the combination of the best of the new world of marketing and the best of the traditional established world of marketing that's actually getting us through this thing. It's, you get a lot of debate in the past about modern marketing versus traditional marketing, and I think it's the best of both. So I think we've learned from the world of the new, we've all had to become more agile. We've all had to sweat digital channels and tech stacks like never before. We've all had to become more collaborative, and all these new skills we've developed over the last decade have been critical. But there's also stuff from age-old traditional skills that have come to the fore. You know, we've been reminded that really there is ultimately no substitute for talking with clients and market research. We've been reminded that isn't content that's king, but ultimately it's our value propositions and our commercial terms and our innovations. You know, we've been reminded that it's actually far easier to have a conversation with a new client if you're already really well known and really well trusted in your brand. So those brands that have spent years building their brands have probably been better served in this pandemic than others that haven't invested in brand and have been a little bit too targeted in their marketing. You know, we've reminded that product development is a critical skill for all of us, which we may have forgotten that. And in an undifferentiated world, really, creativity is the most important weapon that we have. It's the only tool to really stand out in a communication sense. And some of us have been found wanting, and some of us have become legends at finding completely different ways to communicate. Perhaps just in ending, you know, perhaps most importantly of all, though, you know, we've also learned that the better skilled our people are, the more tighter knit we are within marketing teams, the better coaching and training and development we put into our teams, the better our chances of winning. And I think that winning needs both new thinking and those traditional skills. And so I guess to close, you know, I think the crisis has amplified for all of us the good and the bad in our own personal skill sets, in our service lines, in our communications, which we can do is learn from and respond to. And the old expression is, you know, never fail to make the most of a crisis. And I think we've all just got to do what we can to learn from this and improve and add some new skill sets to our bow. The one last thing I'd say is actually we may look back in periods to come and find that this has been the best time for B2B marketers to really step up and be counted and shine and really add value to not just our businesses, but our client businesses, because our businesses are relying on us. So maybe not too much new there. I just wanted to share that's been my experience in the last few months and hopefully a few things that we can kind of take forward for the period yet to come.
Brian, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your insights this afternoon. If people have got questions for Brian, start your question with Brian and put that question in the questions box and we'll be able to get through to them after we've heard from our other speakers. It's time now for our first poll of the webinar, which is available to all of those who are attending the event live via a computer. And this poll asks, what has been the impact of the COVID crisis on your business's approach to marketing innovation? And there are four options, and we're after you're selecting one of them. So we innovate more than before, less than before, we talk the talk, but we haven't really got to walking the walk yet, or really there's been no impact on the way that we approach marketing innovation. We'll give people a moment or two to vote on that. If you have voted, don't forget to ping a question through to Brian, use the questions box and start your question with Brian. Or alternatively, why not tweet along at hashtag B2B lockdown. That's B2B lockdown. And we'll give people another 15 seconds or so to vote on that before we pull the answers. Okay, let's cut the poll there and see what the results say. So, reiterating what we heard from Brian, really, 71% of you are saying that we innovate more now than we did before the crisis. And then it's 10% each for each of the other three options. And I was hoping that poll would be something that we could put to our speaker, Nim Haas. But I'm not sure that Nim has yet managed to join us unless she's joining us by audio. Let me just give her a moment to announce herself if she is. No, maybe we'll be able to get to Nim if she's able to join us a bit later on. Instead then, let's go to our second speaker of the day, Tribe Communications, Karen Williams. Tribe is an agency that has pioneered insight-led communications with measurable audience impact. So I'm delighted that Karen is able to join us. Karen, welcome to the webinar and over to you.
Thanks, Dave. And it's great to be here with everybody, those I can see and those I can't see. So thank you for the invitation. It's been an interesting few months for us. We were used to working from home. We've been based at home for a number of years now. So we didn't have the sort of technology challenges that a lot of people had in making that transition from office to home. We were all set up. So for us, the lockdown was all about being innovative and being agile in terms of how we're able to support our clients and how we were able to be very responsive to, you know, needs that were changing on an almost daily basis. Like you said in your introduction, Dave, you know, we're a data specialist business and we gather a lot of our own data. And what we found since the beginning of the lockdown is that this has never, ever been more important. You know, our clients have been absolutely desperate to obtain current, up-to-the-minute, relevant insights into how customer opinions and customer behaviour have changed and have been shaped by the crisis. And I think probably a lot of B2B marketing colleagues on the call will agree that, you know, there is consensus that what we thought we knew about clients in March from our brand tracking surveys, from our focus groups, from user forums and all that sort of thing has been very much turned on its head. And so a lot of our clients that, you know, have spent the last few weeks trying to work out where exactly their customers are in their heads. And as marketers, that means that we need new data and we need it really quickly so that we can make sensible decisions about the creative options that we choose, about the spend and the allocation of spend and the channels that we select. And, you know, what we've seen for some people is that that's changing almost on a weekly basis. And they've used data to inform those opinions. So I thought it might be helpful to give a little bit of a case study, you know, of a project that we've worked on. We work with a well-known B2B retail brand, and we've been helping them to understand shifting customer priorities and behavior. And a couple of methods have been particularly successful for us. One of them, we use a lot of Google data We find that Google is a really immediate way to keep your finger on the pulse of what customers, whether B2C or B2B, care about right now. And we've seen some really shifting patterns over the last few weeks. So, you know, Google tells us what our clients want to know and helps us to shape our marketing messages and our marketing practices accordingly. So, for example, you know, we might one week see a lot of searches for does my business insurance cover the pandemic, or even more specifically, Hiscox pandemic insurance. So we've combined Google Trends data with text analysis and insights that we can get out of what customers, B2B customers, are saying on social media channels and on Trustpilot reviews, to have a really sort of near real-time barometer for clients of what their customers are thinking about the businesses that they're interacting with, about the world around them, their fears, their hopes, and all of that sort of thing. So for our B2B retailer who relies quite a lot on imported products in their supply chain, for example, that data allowed us to analyze and to identify issues with the supply chain before they became a real business problem. Some teething problems with their new click and collect service that were being fed back as a sort of undercurrent in all of this content, and also to understand very different and very new customer expectations around deliveries, for example, direct to construction sites. So, you know, very different business model that they were trying to get to grips with. And the marketing team, you know, needed all of the data to understand how to address the issues before they thought about business as usual marketing. And I think that's a key point for me. It's pointless to try to restart business as usual marketing until we've actually addressed all of the issues and the problems that are bothering our customers at the moment and keeping them awake at night. So we really need to get our heads around where customers stand in relation to our businesses before we can start moving them again along the journey, the customer journey that we want to take them on, and doing our own brand storytelling in the way that we've traditionally done. Lockdown's given us an opportunity as well to sort of move our own products forward very much. We do a lot in the field of online media analysis and evaluation. And having everybody locked down for 3 months, reliant on their iPads and their iPhones and their computers, I think meant that people have become a lot more reliant on the content in online news media than they even were beforehand. So if you look back to the 2019 Ofcom survey, it said that, you know, 66% of people use online media for news as a preference. And that will have absolutely rocketed during lockdown. And in some demographics, it's as high as 82 or 83% already. So what that means for us as marketers is that what people are seeing and reading about our companies, our brands, our products, our services in online news has become massively more influential than it ever was before. So one of the tactics that we've been recommending to clients is, you know, Brian talked about the mix of traditional and new marketing methods. We've been saying to people, go very much back towards the traditional PR approach, because at the moment you've got a captive audience, and PR has actually paid dividends for some of our clients because they've been able to get earned media content onto the desktops or the mobile screens of the audience that they're trying to reach during lockdown. The key thing about online media content, I think the interesting thing about it is that it's a lot more powerful than people realise, because it influences behaviour in a way that print media never has. And as B2B marketers, if we ever did use PR as part of the mix, we probably thought about that as being through trade publications, print publications. But actually, you know, you can show that there's a direct correlation between people seeing news about your business online and searching for more information using Google about your products and services, or visiting your website. And you know, if the client's willing, you can even go as far as to show a correlation between earned PR on online sites and sales data. So we've been really, really encouraging clients to invest in that to benefit from exposure in regional, national and trade publications. The other thing that we've been encouraging people to do, and I think it's something that people perhaps don't do enough of because it's really, really expensive to do it using traditional methods, is to benchmark themselves against competitors. Because as we all come out of this situation, it's really helpful to know how you're positioned against competitors, whether your messages are cutting through, what you're associated with. And so we've used a lot of online media and social media analysis to help people make those direct comparisons. And that leads on, I think, to sort of the final main point that I want to make, Dave, which is that at the moment, we seem to be in a situation where COVID still dominates very much the national news agenda. You know, the health crisis is still at the forefront. It's hard to watch the BBC News. You know, you get a long way through it before you get to hear about anything other than COVID. And that's absolutely the case for us as marketers. For a lot of businesses, all of the news that's out there about them is still very much related to coronavirus. So at the height of the lockdown, we used our text mining capabilities across a number of B2B sectors in the UK, from manufacturing to laptops to insurance to construction. And it actually revealed that, you know, over 90% of content at any given time was not about anything that marketers wanted to say about the business. It was about the impact of coronavirus on the business. And that trend has been very, very slow to decay. And there's probably going to be a while longer before that curve flattens. Last time I looked, for many sectors, it was still more than 50% of content about certain industries was related to coronavirus. And in that situation, I think you need to think very, very carefully before you start pressing the button on any creative campaigns or any traditional marketing methods that you might want to employ. So I think the biggest question for me as a B2B marketing professional at the moment is like, when is the right time? When is the right time to start, you know, doing the things that we want to do to reach out to the audience again? And how do we cut through the noise that's been created by coronavirus? And I think that's probably a tide that we're going to be pushing against for quite a long while to come. And as Brian said, you know, in his presentation, it's not all about data. It's not all about channels. It's not all about content. But I do believe that now, more than ever, having the right data at a time when customers are really sensitive about how companies are behaving and how they communicate and how they market is really key, so that we don't put a foot wrong as we emerge from this situation and start to market in a new world.
Karen, thank you for that. That's really thought-provoking stuff. If you've got any questions for Karen, please do add them to the questions box and start your question with Karen, and we'll get those points over to her after we've heard from all of our speakers. Also, we welcome any more questions for Brian. It looks like our fourth speaker has arrived in a very timely way. Nim, it's good to see you. We'll be with you shortly. So we welcome questions for Brian and for Karen. But let's now go to our second poll. This actually follows on, I hope, from what Karen was saying. It asks, on a scale of 1 to 5, how would you rate the response of the PR community to the COVID crisis? Ranging from 5, excellent, down to 1, not good. And we'll give you a moment or two to be able to respond to that. If you have responded, we're welcoming questions for Karen or for Brian right now in the questions box. Or why not tweet along at hashtag B2B lockdown. That's hashtag B2B lockdown. We'll give you another 20 seconds or so on this question, and then we'll come back. Okay, let's cut the poll there and see what dogs got. And so it's interesting. Nobody is kind of rating the community as 5 out of 5, excellent, but encouragingly, 37% of people are saying good, 32% are saying okay, but there's clearly a kind of message of more to do on the PR front, which is perhaps reflected in some of the challenges that Karen talked about. Thank you for that. That might be something that we want to ask more questions on of our speakers, maybe a bit later on. Okay, let's come to our third speaker now, who's arrived in an astonishingly timely way. This is Women in Tech UK's Nim Haas. Nim is a communication and marketing expert with over 15 years of experience working within the tech sector. She's provided marketing and communication consultancy for various fintech, paytech, and regtech companies in the past year. Prior to that, she was leading the global marketing for global processing services, the issue process behind the likes of Starling Bank, Curve, Soldo, and Anna Money. She is recognized by the Holmes Report amongst the top 25 innovators in marketing and communication for EMEA, and in Innovate Finance, Standout 35, Women in Fintech. Nim, I'm really relieved.
I'm delighted
that you're here on the webinar. So over to you.
Hi guys, and thanks a lot, Dave, for having me. And really sorry for the technical logistics issue. But yes, I'm really happy to be on board and discuss the various marketing strategies that have been deployed. Please bear with me. I am also in Mallorca, so I'm a bit under 36, 37 degree heat and trying to think and get all my thoughts compiled together. work and pleasure at the same time. But yes, I'm just going to go on this, just to go back on the question prior on the PR. I think it was actually interesting to see that no one rated excellent. I think some companies are slowly coming to the conclusion that they need to be more transparent. I think, you know, with staff being laid off, with various, you know, issues happening in my sector, for example, with the scandal and issue that happened with Wirecard, obviously that's pushed the fintech and the payment sector to want to review the regulations in place, but at the same time push that transparency not only with our end users and customers, but also with our partners, also with third parties that we may collaborate with. So I think COVID in this particular time, and as I think I was multitasking with my logistics problem and listening to Brian, but as Brian was saying rightly just prior and Karen as well, I think this whole kind of coronavirus phase has created the envy for everyone to try and engage more closely with our customers, with our end users. I think the transparency, the understanding, the fact that, you know, it's a hard time for many businesses, big and small, at the same time to understand, I think, that emotional engagement that we may have lost throughout the years. You know, a bad for a good, but coronavirus and also that everything has been pushed to digital transformation and online has paradoxically, weirdly enough, created that human engagement that we were always kind of debating about losing because everything was being digitally transformed. And I think with the coronavirus and having had that whole global human push online, we've managed to not only push all businesses online and try and innovate, but at the same time we've actually increased the human engagement because we're so scared of losing it, right? Because with all social media and social distancing happening and things like that. And I thought that was actually a really interesting angle to see it that way, that, you know, in our sector and digital banking and various challenges, we're always debating about losing the emotion intelligence because everything's automated and we're using AI more frequently. So I think, and also, you know, even from a marketing point of view, we're always trying to optimize everything by automating everything and the use of machine learning. And I think the fear of losing that emotional intelligence and engagement with our end users, and I see it that, you know, coronavirus and the fact that everyone has had to manage quickly such a fast turnover into digital channels, we've managed to actually not only achieve that, but at the same time increase and maintain the emotional engagement with all the parties and different stakeholders across the business. That was my little point.
Nim, thank you very much, and it's great to hear from you. And if people have got questions for Nim, please do start your question with Nim and put it in the questions box, and we'll get those questions over to Nim before her subsequent quarantining period is over.
Yes.
So also we welcome questions for Brian and questions for Karen right now. Please do ping them in the questions box and we'll get to them when we can. Time now for our third poll. This one asks, how has the COVID crisis changed your use of LinkedIn? And there are five options here, ranging from it's at the top of our to-do list now, all the way down to it's fallen off that to-do list, and we'll give you a moment or two to be able to respond to that. In the meantime, do hashtag B2B lockdown on social media with us, or alternatively, ping a question over to our speakers. We've heard from Brian, we've heard from Karen, we've heard from Nim. I'm sure you must have some questions to raise with them. We'll give people another 20 seconds on these questions and then we'll look at where we are. Okay, let's cut it there and see what the results are. So, interestingly, 40% of you are saying that there's actually been no change in your use of LinkedIn over the course of the COVID crisis. But then there's a big increase in usage that is reflected by no less than 55% of people. So 25% of you are saying it's at the top of our to-do list right now. 30% are saying it's crept up our to-do list right now, which has to be good news as we come to our fourth speaker, LinkedIn's sales and marketing solutions, Grace McDonald. Grace focuses on creating innovative and engaging content experiences around topics that help B2B sales and marketing professionals do their jobs better. Grace, welcome to the webinar and over to you.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me. And it was a pleasure hearing from everyone else. I don't know if you were setting me up for success or failure with that poll question. I'm glad it worked in a positive way for me.
It's turned out well.
And it's great to see that people's use of LinkedIn is increasing. I presume your question there was around more the ad space, but there's also so much organically you can do as well. And we're seeing people do so much more on the platform as well, that I will talk about in a second as too. So again, I wasn't sure going last would it be very difficult, but everything you guys have said has really covered stuff that I've already jotted down for myself. And one common thread between all the other speakers was like an audience first approach. I think that's the biggest thing that's come out of this whole experience. I think every company says we take an audience first approach, but we do kind of lose our way on the path quite often, I think, with so much else going on and so many shiny things around us sometimes as well with technology. And I think that this whole crisis has helped us come back to that and really think about what are we doing? How can we cut through the noise? Are we providing value at every single touch point? And if we're not, scrap it. And that's something we did at LinkedIn. We had to pivot very quickly because LinkedIn was really seen, as Karen mentioned, as a news platform for all of this. And our editorial teams were working really, really hard on making sure that all the news that was being put out on LinkedIn was validated. They were working with governments and stuff. And it meant then for me working in the marketing and sales solution side of the business, which is our ads and our sales navigator, we were also needing to be up to that standard. There wasn't any excuse for us not to be, which meant that some of our projects, when we reassessed them, we just pivoted and we completely cut things, which as a marketer, B2B is quite difficult. You know, you can be quite passionate about something, but it was the right thing to do for our audience and for our business. The other thing around putting your audience first is that trust piece. So making sure that you are a trusted partner, that whatever you're saying, whatever you're doing is consulting them rather than trying to do a hard sell. A hard sell does not work right now. And that's something that we've seen through research from the B2B Institute, from LinkedIn, from many other places, and I'm sure we're all experiencing ourselves. Interestingly, when all of this started back in March, Kantar did a survey and it came back saying that only 8% of consumers thought that brands should stop advertising. So we thought that was really interesting. You would have thought it was higher with so much going on and so much, your mind is just consumed by so many other things. So for us, that's been really interesting and something we've been watching very closely. I think coming back to what Nim was talking about as well, like that human element and really the partnerships between sales and marketing as well as our clients has been really, really critical. And it's something that we've been working really hard to try and do in a very like organic and productive way, because so many people, everyone has so many meetings all the time. And there's all these articles about Zoom fatigue and everything like this, where you need a break and you need to be able to step back. So when we engage with our sales teams and when they engage with us, we want to make sure that we're getting the most value we possibly can out of it without that human interaction or that face-to-face interaction, but also a little bit of social elements. Like we are all people, we all know each other from offices and from previous VCs and stuff. So that's been really important too. We brought out some research from LinkedIn and Forrester over the course of coronavirus. And that was looking at sales and marketing professionals and collaboration. And we all know that collaboration and sales and marketing alignment is key to success, but we wanted to actually put some hard metrics against it. So when we did the survey, we found that 9 out of 10 people agreed that sales and marketing alignment drives business revenue and it also gives a better customer experience. So stuff like that is really important for us. Some other stuff that we've been looking at, so we brought out some guides around COVID and trying to help our audiences to market on the platform better, especially on the ad solution side of the business. But I come from a startup background, so I always kind of think of the scrappy ways to do it. And one thing we wanted to produce, and Dave, you were actually involved in one of our articles for this, was around how can you not just scrap content that you've previously put money into, how can you, with lower budgets that we're all working with, that we're tight, we know we're tight and we need to figure out to do more with less. How can you make videos work better? How can you bleed content so that it works like for much longer? So a guide that we recently created, we ended up at a 26-page guide. We created like 18 assets and we're going to keep going into the next couple of months to do that too. So we wanted to kind of think more about just getting those bang for your buck, which has been really important. And then I guess on that same topic is around measurement. We've all kind of mentioned that things are tight, it's much more difficult to prove business ROI at the moment, especially from a B2B marketing. Our sales cycles are long, it's difficult. So really thinking about the difference between short-term KPIs and how you present them to your stakeholders and our longer-term return on investment, which goes the whole sales cycle. So that's something we've been trying to just educate non-marketers about, that they're different things. There's kind of other metrics like the engagement, views, all this kind of stuff that you can look at short term and conversion rate, but long term to actually prove the value of something you're working on, it takes that bit longer in B2B. So that's some of the stuff we've been thinking about as a LinkedIn content team.
Grace, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for taking us through the many, many things that are on your in tray at the moment. And I'm sure people will have questions for you. And we're welcoming questions now for any of our speakers, for Brian, for Karen, for Nim, for Grace. Ping your questions into the questions box and start it with the name of the person that you want to be able to address the question. And we'll be able to get through a ton of them now. So please do ping those through. The first question for Brian comes from Douglas Horn, who asks, what piece of B2B marketing has, quote, blown your socks off over the last few months?
Oh, that's a good question. Hello, Doug. How are you doing, man? Do you know, I've had my head down, I think, in my own world, and I haven't taken enough time to look at what is going on outside my sector. I've seen a few things in. I saw one thing that McKinsey did the other day that was quite good, but I'm not going to sit and market them any further than that. So I don't really have a good answer for you, Doug. I've got a couple of things that we're kind of proud of, but anything where, you know, we've got a conscious effort at the moment where we see a topic that other people are talking about, we're literally saying, well, anything else that they've done, don't do it like that. Let's find a completely different way. Some of the things we've got going are only, we've done this Picasso and Salvador Dali inspired campaign. It's going quite well at the moment. Which we hadn't seen other people doing, and I've got some tricks up our sleeve which haven't hit the market yet, so I'm not going to say anything, but I haven't seen a great amount. I'm interested in what the others have seen, but I've had my head down in just my personal circumstance. I only joined my firm last year. I only actually hired my first set of marketers during lockdown. We've had to onboard four new marketing automation platform and a whole bunch of other stuff that we didn't have before during lockdown. It's been a kind of an accelerated build for me. So I've had my head in my own processes a little bit, which is probably embarrassing to admit.
So Brian's pleading the fifth. So I'm gonna go in and pass it around our other speakers. So Karen, what would you say was the piece of B2B marketing that's really impressed you or wowed you over the last few months?
Gosh. That is a really difficult question, isn't it?
Let me come yeah, back to you.
Let
I'm
me
gonna
reflect.
Go straight, I'm going to go to Nim. Nim, what are your thoughts? You need to turn your mic on.
I'm not going to say anything that maybe wowed me, but I am always continuously impressed. I mean, let's put it this way, payments is not the most exciting sector to work in. I say that working in the sector. But I'm a big fan of Modular's marketing team. I think they do it amazingly in terms of the content. They're continuously creating really interesting content pieces, insightful industry pieces. At the same time, I think they've launched the Summer School of Payments or something like that, which is very knowledge-based, but it's continuous. It might be research industry insightful. At the moment, there is a big trend going towards providing more knowledge sharing and training. So they've also, you know, not kind of like the Summer School of Payments. They just come up with all these really creative ideas in terms of making payments fun from a B2B aspect. And, you know, when you work in the sector, you know how not fun it is. It's very flat. So I'm very admirative of what they do. I think they've got a great marketing team in place and absolutely love their content that they do.
Okay. What about you, Grace?
Yeah, mine is actually on the same thread as Nim's. So it's financial services. We've seen a lot of our financial services B2B clients just really take hold of this whole experience. So the last recession was really caused by the banks. And this time the banks are coming out and being so informative and helpful and trusted. And BNP Paribas is one of the best I've seen. Their C-suite is also coming out and doing so much thought leadership. And they're really just trying to enable people to get through this whole experience together. Been really impressed by that. The other one I'd mention, it's not specifically B2B, but it's Collision, which is a large scale digital event I watched recently. And I'm joining loads of digital events to see how people are doing them because it's just so interesting to see people pivoting. So I thought what they did there was really, really interesting too.
There's some great examples there. Thanks, Grace. Karen, has that bought you enough time?
It's bought me some time, but can I say something that didn't impress me?
Go for it.
And I think it's probably something that jumped out for a lot of colleagues as well. And that was around the whole Black Lives Matter issue. And I think, you know, it really gave pause for reflection as a marketer about what is the appropriate response to, you know, something which is a real societal issue like that. But I think, you know, particularly on LinkedIn and on other social channels, we saw a huge amount of people jumping on the purpose bandwagon in a way that was actually very uncomfortable. And you know, for me, I think that was a lesson from lockdown that, you know, when you're going to be associating yourself with blackouts and all of that sort of thing, you need to be really, really sure that you've got good credentials as a business and a reason to be participating in those conversations. I know I've turned it on my head a bit, on its head a bit, but you know,
Good advice. Let's go to another question. So this question will be for Karen, and it comes from Geraint Holloman. And Geraint asks, what one single thing should B2B marketers take from COVID, either do better or stop doing?
I think it is about doing better the whole data analysis and getting close to your customers. I think audience closeness is really key. Whatever tactics you use to ask questions of the people that you're trying to sell to understand where they are practically, emotionally, at this point in time, you know, I think gathering the data that allows you to have a clear view of where your customers are at this point in time will stop you making mistakes when you restart the marketing engine.
Great advice. Great advice. Nim, you talked in your piece about techniques for not losing emotional intelligence. And I wondered what are the top techniques that you could guide us through to try to make sure that we keep emotional intelligence going in spite of the tech?
Sorry, I'm actually really multitasking at the moment. So in terms of the emotion intelligence, I think if you go on the principle that, you know, so many people have been either laid off by their jobs, you know, they're either in a position where they're actually thinking if they want to stay and work in the same sector or maybe transit to other roles or other sectors. I think from an emotional point of view, anything that a business could provide for another business in terms of even, we hate the word free, right, but being marketers, but during this particular phase, many companies and end users, individuals are being very, very careful with their spending, where they put their spending. And I think that if we can actually support them and offer them, you know, free advice or free workshops or things to support not only the growth of their own business, but in partnership with our own, obviously, so they both can find benefits. I think that's one strategy. I think to be able to still provide that emotional connection through support and understanding. I think as Grace was saying before, you know, it's not a moment in B2B to be trying to do cold selling. No one cares, let's be honest. You know, they're more concerned about how am I going to keep my business afloat? You know, how am I going to actually retain my current customers and not lose them? Will they still be able to pay, you know, their recurrent or their monthly minimums and so on, depending on what sector you're in? And that whole concern, I think it's demonstrating, I think, the emotional intelligence that as a business, we understand what the other business is going through if they've had to lay people off, you know, revenues are cut, budgets are cut, and how we can both closely work together as partnerships in terms of trying to overcome, you know, the challenges ahead or the current challenges. And that might be, I mean, I do it with other companies. It might be like, hey, I've got a webinar platform. You don't have one. There's no point subscribing to one. If you need it, you know, you can just use it. Or just sharing cost on things. Let's do a white paper. You know, we've got the copywriters internally and the design. And I think just supporting other businesses and partners around us and other stakeholders and demonstrating that we're actually working all together to move forward and overcome, you know, the challenges ahead. We strengthen that emotional intelligence and that connection engagement that we have with all our different stakeholders.
Good advice. Thank you. Question for Grace. This one comes from Matthew Kent. And Matthew says, with the use of social media increasing during the pandemic, has LinkedIn seen user engagement with advertising or sponsored activity on its site increase, decrease, or stay the same?
Yeah, I wouldn't have exact numbers, but I know just like anecdotally it has increased from speaking to clients and speaking to even the speakers before this call. It definitely, there is more happening on the platform, and it's something that our team is trying to be really intelligent about, the way that we advise our clients then and our advertisers to use it. So there's some quite intelligent ways you can go lower in your costs on LinkedIn. So use different targeting. Say if you wanted to reach B2B marketers like us, and if we just go with job title, most people are going to do that. But you can look at skills, you can look at different education, stuff like that, that kind of will drive down your costs because competition is lower. So there's some interesting things like that, and we're producing content the whole time on the LMS EMEA blog, which would be you could just Google it, which we have the whole time. That kind of helps that.
Thank you. Question for Brian from Andrew Freeman. Andrew says that, Brian, you mentioned the flooding of some marketing channels during the crisis. What do you think the channel winners and losers are going to be in the longer term? For example, will physical events recover as a channel, do you think?
Inevitably, it will. I guess the big question is when. We've actually seen a number of quite big industry events actually be scheduled for October and November in our world. And we do see people signing up to them. I just know that now that they only sign up to them making sure there's a get out clause and you can get your money back out. I know that there's a lot of people looking to start doing mailings again, but via fulfillment houses. So we saw a spate of wine tasting and cheese tasting and stuff going on, but I think that those have been done a little bit now. It's a really hard one. Actually, I think I'm with Karen. I think PR and earned media has now returned in terms of importance. Social is always going to have a place. You know, we're really active on LinkedIn, but what we realize is actually now you've got to make sure yours is the most cut through, the most attention grabbing, the most value creating, the least hard sell. I was with you, Grace, totally. I think clients can smell a hard sell like a rat at the minute, and it's tough. There are definitely fewer channels. We've seen a real return. Google up. We've seen a lot more referral traffic out of Google the last few months. So people are searching. That behavior doesn't seem to have abated anytime soon. It is tough. I think we're all waiting to see how the next few months develops.
Thanks, Brian. Karen, I was wondering what your commentary was on the PR poll that we shared a moment or two ago with I guess a relatively tepid rating for PR. And I wondered in the light of what you were saying, whether that was because actually in the initial stages of lockdown, it was quite difficult for traditional PR to really be able to make any kind of cut through given the focus on COVID.
Yeah, I wasn't really surprised by the results of the poll. I think at the beginning of the lockdown, PR teams went straight into crisis communications mode. A lot of people had to sort of deal with messaging around things like furlough, you know, obviously where there was disruption to services, disruption to supply chains. And it was only probably later that people started to think about, okay, what can we do proactively on the PR front? But I think there's a deeper issue here, Dave, to be honest. And that is that over the last few years, as everything has focused on digitization and, you know, new channels, PR has been very much undervalued as a part of the marketing mix. And maybe we as, you know, marketing professionals, marketing directors, people who are actually responsible for allocating budget, need to think again about the value that we can get from PR. One of the main issues that PR has is that it's been traditionally very difficult to prove ROI. But I think now there are ways and means of doing that which go well beyond advertising value equivalents, volumes of clippings, impressions, opportunities to see, to show that PR is actually having an impact on sales and other tangible business outcomes. And I think the more we as B2B marketers can appreciate that, the more likely we are to, if you like, readmit the PR team to the inner circle in terms of the tactics that we choose.
Okay, thank you, Karen. A question for Nim from Nick Eads, who's dubbing himself Dr. Doom in this question. Nick says, assuming that wave two really is 2 weeks away, what should we be doing now to be better prepared than we were for wave one?
Well, I'm going to be in Mallorca, so I'm just going to eat that for 2 weeks, to be honest. I'm not going to be in the UK. Yeah, I've been thinking about that. I mean, I personally think we're going to go through a second wave. So I think everyone probably thinks we are going to go through a second wave, like in Asia, where, you know, they went through a first wave, calmed down, went through a second peak. And Europe will see different peaks, I think, between September and December. Is make sure you retain your current customers. Make sure that's you know, being a consultant and advising other companies, they're also so focused. You know, we went through a phase of panic. I think many businesses went through a big phase of panic for 2 or 3 months going, revenues, we're not going to hit the revenue targets. You know, what tactics should we do, this and that, and completely neglecting, well, actually, you know, the 80-20 rule, you know, you've got your 80% of existing customers, don't neglect them, make sure they're actually okay. You know, make sure if you've got account managers in place that, you know, you're communicating to your existing customers that financially they're doing okay, do they need any support, you know, even if it's just for a chat because they've been isolated, you know, God knows where, for 3 months. You know, and I think moving forward is making sure you do that balance split between nurturing your existing customers and making sure they're okay, and, you know, that they're going to stay, and if they're going through financial difficulties, to help them through if there's obviously a second wave. So I would recommend to see what strategy you have in terms of nurturing your existing clients, communicating with your existing clients, helping and supporting your existing clients. And for the second wave, may we all have help. For the second wave, you know, I think by then we'll all be a bit saturated with Zoom, with webinars, with whatever is digital. So creativity, I think, as Brian and Karen and Grace were also saying, creativity is going to be a must to be able to kind of break through all the noise. So I would put your creative thinking hats on now and think already of a second phase, because it will happen. Okay. So you might as well just start thinking now. Webinars and Zoom calls and all that is going to be very saturated. So you need to start thinking about other things, maybe.
What's
that
next?
Can be transported online, let it be, you know, 3D kind of creative ideas, different things where there's more engagement between the screens. Right. But yeah, I would already start thinking about that now.
Thank you, Nim. And a final question. This is quite a technical one, actually, from Steph Bridgman for Grace. And Steph says that it's easy to export post-level impressions and engagement data for company pages on LinkedIn, but not for posts by individuals. Are there any plans to change this? Steph reflects that more individuals are seeing the benefits of LinkedIn. So why not make an individual first approach to the analytics capabilities of the platform?
I think it's a really solid call out. I work on the advertising side of it, so the kind of consumer brand and that roadmap, I wouldn't be that familiar with. But if you want to add me on LinkedIn and ask the question again, I can definitely try and chase the right person, but I just don't want to tell you anything that's not true. Just to add as well to the question for Nim as well, I think segment your customers now is really important. So some customers, say Zoom, let's say, are doing really well. They're going to do great in the second wave. So segment, think about what it means for all the different client types. Not all of them are going to be doing bad, and they're all going to be doing different. They're all going to have different experiences. So trying to kind of bucket them be important.
Cool. Thank you for that. I've got two vacancies that we want to flag. So Pega are looking for a B2B marketer to support the company's ABM and lead generation efforts into the financial services vertical for a 6-month contract with the potential to turn permanent. Please contact matt.kent@pega.com if you want more information on that. Also, there is a role based in Manchester, product marketing manager role, looking for the flair for communicating technical messages, for initiating conversations, asking questions and writing. Ping me if you're interested in that, and I will make sure that the appropriate person gets to hear about it. And some quick domestics, you can listen again to this webinar from tomorrow. This is our last COVID webinar, but we've got a brand new webinar series that starts next Wednesday at 16:30 BST that looks at how business marketers are coping with change. And we've got around about 25 really quite keynote professional speakers ready and primed to go on that conversation. You'll need to sign up anew. I hope you do. Available to download now is our weekly podcast. This week it's all about social media. And if you sign up to be a member of the Business Marketing Club, you can get access to all of our events and webinars, to our mentoring service for business marketers, to our white papers and blogs free of charge. And those white papers include one from Emeritus Professor Cranfield University School of Management, Malcolm McDonald, about how to develop financially quantified value propositions that capture the attention of their customers. Details of all of that at businessmarketingclub.org.uk, or you can contact me at davestevensnow@gmail.com. So that's it. Thanks to our absolutely brilliant speakers, to Brian McCready, to Nim Haas, to Karen Williams, and to Grace McDonald. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to our brilliant backroom team who supported us through 4 months of COVID webinars. So thanks to Louise Neal, Claire Sheriff, Elise Bailey-Probert, Josh Bench and Jay Neal. And most of all, thank you for participating. It's been brilliant having you along on this. And from us all, I hope you have a great evening. Thanks a lot and bye for now.